Well, let's just jump in the deep end. It's the news. According to me. Good morning. It's Wednesday. It's already Wednesday. Wednesday, April 24th, 7:48 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your host with the most chai in his cup this morning. I have, it is April 24th, Wednesday, 7:48 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2024. I'm the guy who's not a doctor, not a lawyer, not a financial counselor. I'm not a virologist. I'm not even a psychologist. I just pretend like I'm a little bit, like, you know, I just pretend like I'm a little psycho. I have so much to talk about. I have and yet nothing to talk about at all. It's the show where we talk about so much and yet nothing at all. I'm sorry, my microphone's, I'm trying to adjust my microphone here and it's making some noises. I'm not sure what that's all about. I have normally it's pretty quiet when I swing it around all over the place here, but it's not on a Wednesday apparently. I have a few things to talk about. I do want to get into the. I talked about what I was going to talk about today, but that's not going to happen. I do have a backup cup of my homemade sweet tea. This is going to be the standard here for the next couple of weeks, just so you know, so you're not surprised. Well, maybe there'll be a surprise because we do have some other things in the refrigerator that I might just use as a, who knows, standby, maybe a primary cup. So just stay tuned because you never know when that day might be. And I still have a cat playing around my feet here. She's so cute. So I have a few things I want to talk about. One of the big issues that's coming up really right now is the whole thing with the Jack Smith case against Donald Trump. There have been some initially in some of the initial releases of information about that whole case. There were some emails, some communications between Jack Smith and some people from NARA, which is the National Archives Records Administration, whatever they are. What it amounts to is there's this guy named Leo somebody, Sanchez, whatever his name is, who was involved in this communication between the president's administration and the records office. And apparently most of the communication that was released was heavily redacted. It was almost entirely 100% redacted. It was just ridiculous. It was ridiculous, ridiculous. And that has been released now without the redactions. And now we find out it is just this one man's vendetta against Trump from the NRA, from the NAR, NARA, NARA. That has led to this entire thing. That it led to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. It led to the indictments. It led to everything that Jack Smith is involved in, including the fact that Jack Smith has not been properly appointed as a special counsel. This is another big issue. His credibility, his actual qualifications for being special counsel is just ridiculous. It doesn't even exist. So this whole thing is shown to be a scam. Now, it's also very clear that the Biden administration was behind all of this. In fact, there are ties to the Barack Obama people. I've got to sneeze, and I'm going to push my button here for just a second. It's coming. I promise it's coming. It's just, yeah, I will. I averted a sneeze, I guess. I don't know. It never did work. So, not sure what's going on there. So the whole process of this whole thing has been, it goes way deeper than we realize. And there's so many people involved in this whole thing. Right up to the DOJ, right up to the president's administration. You know, I'm not going to say the president because I don't think he knows what, I'm sure he knows who his predecessor was. He probably thinks he was Abraham Lincoln. So the whole thing has kind of fallen apart. That's the bottom line of what's actually happening there. And I guess the takeaway from all of this is along with Fannie Willis, Fannie, down in Georgia, that whole case is atrocious. They're going to have to basically eliminate her based just on several grounds. And the state of Georgia now is taking motions to do that. It's really in the state of Georgia's hands to take care of this situation. She should not be in that position. And of course, if she leaves that position, they're going to put another AG in there, and they have to find an AG that will actually take the case. And most AGs will not even look at it because this has been an issue of – this is – one of the main things basically is that the department this case has actually already been tried. It's not even – there was a grand jury in Georgia that looked at the case and, you know, rejected it was some kind of a court that was above what's going on now, looked at it and said there was no case there, the way I understand it. And yet they went ahead with this. That's why they know they're going to lose on appeal, because if it goes any higher, it's going to be knocked down. It already has been. The fact that it even came out as a case, it goes against everything that's been already historical law. It just doesn't exist. This idea that he can say something about the election being stolen. The whole premise of this whole case is that in the Georgia case is that he was claiming, they're trying to get him on racketeering. He was claiming that the election was stolen. He was lying, saying that the election was stolen. He believed, if you believe something to be true, you're not lying about it. He believes that the election was stolen, and he went after, he was operating as a candidate would, to find out how much if there was corruption or not. He was calling on people down in Georgia, those who were in charge at the time, to figure out what was going on down there. And everybody that he talked to basically has been now indicted in all kinds of things because they're saying that it's racketeering. It was this whole scheme to overthrow the election, overturn the results of the election. This happens in every close election, by the way. And now they're finding out historically that nothing different happened here. They're even going after the lawyers. Now this has never really happened in the history of this country, not on this kind of scale, at least. There have been some, and I guarantee you down in some, I know, happen to know that down in Arkansas, it just happens to be where Bill and Hillary sprouted from. There is basically a lawyer mafia in Arkansas. If you don't have a lawyer, if you don't know a lawyer down there, you're not going to get anywhere. And it's an interesting state in that it's an interesting state. That's all I'm going to say about that. And of course, Bill and Hillary were both lawyers. I believe Hillary was disbarred. And Bill let his legal practice go, which, well, we'll get into that. It's another whole other rabbit hole there. But the interesting part about the whole thing is how the legal system and all their buddies behind the scenes do all this stuff. Now, I have heard, I've been listening to a few lawyers on the left who are making claims about Donald Trump and the cases and all this stuff that's going on. They are trying to, it's borderline slander against some of the judges that are involved in this thing in terms of the ones who are I think being fair and being blind in this whole thing, they're just looking at the law. And this one lawyer guy who's got a YouTube channel, YouTube lawyer guy, it's not Robert Gavea. Gavea understands the law. He can break it down for you in a heartbeat. This guy just goes off on this stuff where it's all emotional stuff. And I don't understand how the law plays into this emotional thing where he talks about the law and how this, he can't believe this one judge is doing this and doing that. And I can't believe the decision made on this. He won't go into any case law. He doesn't go into any kind of historical law. And this is what you got to do. And this is Robert. That's the thing I appreciate about Robert Gavea. He'll go back and say such and such versus such and such has this, and you know, all this historical evidence on how this is supposed to play out. There's precedent on this. It's already been decided in some way. Now you can overthrow that. You can overturn that kind of thing. Because sometimes there was some bad. There may have been bad. I almost stepped on my kitty. You're okay. There we go. You're okay. Just happened to get under my foot there. There may have been some bad decisions. In fact, juries have that power. And most judges will not instruct the jury that they can actually abolish a law if it's bad law. The juries have incredible power, but judges do never let them know that. But that's something for another day, because I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a judge, I'm not a juror, potentially. I think I got called for jury duty one time, and the day I was supposed to go in, the night before or whatever, I called in to make sure I was still on the docket or whatever, and the case was dropped or whatever, so I didn't have to go. Now, I talk about this, and I'll probably watch tomorrow, I'll get called in for jury duty. Or I'll get some kind of notification I'm up for. Who knows? But strangely enough, I've never actually been on the jury anywhere. I've had relatives that have done that. I've gotten all kinds of things that have happened like that, but I never have been. Now, I do have some biases. I would like to think I could be objective on everything. However, there's probably some things I would have some biases on, and I don't know. I don't know what they are. Depends on if the case would come up, I would probably go, oh yeah, I can't do that. I don't know. If I knew the person or something like that, or if I knew, you know, a victim, or if I was a victim of something, I'd probably have a little bit of, I'd have to do some soul searching on that one. But I would like to think that I can balance that out with having principle of law above my opinions or my emotions. It's not always possible, but that's, you know, I'd like to think I could. Now, that being said, the people we're dealing with they run 100% on emotion. They're, or I should say 99% on emotion. And they view everything through an emotional lens. And this is where it gets very skewed and how they can build up a case. This is, there was a time when the Messiah confronted the religious leaders of the day. And I've heard this said. Now, he was actually rebuking them, and I've heard actually people say, well, you have to build precept on precept. No, precepts are built on truth. Precepts aren't built on other precepts. You have to be very, very careful with that kind of a thing. A precept is something that you build based on, okay, you got this truth about this, and so you build a precept. In other words, you build this is a conclusion from that truth. So that's the easiest way I want to talk about it. I'm not an English teacher. I'm not a dictionary. But that's my understanding and my ability to convey it to you. That's what a precept is. Now, if you build a precept upon a precept, in other words, you take a bunch of these precepts that you built on truth, you take these precepts, and then you take from there, you take that and you try to build another precept on top of that. Now you're getting what's called a house of cards when it comes to philosophical, life-changing counsel. Because it becomes very dangerous. This is where a lot of cults come from. In fact, I'm going to dive into this a little bit. I've had this conversation with several people. Now, the other day, our little home group, we have what we call a Torah study, but we don't always study Torah. Sometimes we study the Hebrew alphabet, or we'll study some of the things in the Midrash. It's kind of an expansion. And most of what we do, the biggest thing that we do, is we study the feasts and the festivals and some of the other things like the wedding feast. The things that would basically explain a lot more about prophetic events and the life and history of Messiah than the foretelling of Messiah, than much of Scripture. It's interesting how it all fits together. Blows your mind. There's not been a meeting where we've had. You guys remember Rabbi Rick? He's the teacher of that thing. He used to be on the show here a couple of years ago. And the interesting thing about this whole thing the way I say it is, we as Christians should be fulfilling Judaism. Christianity should be the fulfillment of Judaism. And unfortunately, the church in the West, the Christian church of the West, mostly, even the Reformed Christians, even the Lutheran movement, the Reformation, all of those things, all the denominations you see are basically reformations or restorations of Catholicism, which came out of the first century, actually the second century, but in Armenia, if you go back to this, the history of Armenia, now I've got a good buddy of mine, I've had him on the show before. I would love to interview him. Historically, he knows history very well. He's good at history. He knows this stuff. He can tell you, he remembers all the history of mankind and much of it. He's much more deeply studied than I am on this stuff. But Armenia is an interesting place. It was one of the first Christian nations, I think back in 303 or 301, something like that, the 300th century, or third century, 300, yeah, 305, something like that, it became officially. But it's, to this day, it has some of the oldest churches, Christian churches there. Now, most of what is there has come out of what is known as the Roman Catholic Church. And, of course, the Roman Catholic Church evolved over a couple hundred years to become what we know of as most of the Western Church. And there's an extreme twisting of the Judaic faith roots that we have, and it's kind of what this. We're not the only group that does this. There's groups all over the nation doing this over the world, really. But it's this Judaic roots movement is what it's called sometimes, where you understand that look, Jesus was born a Jew. He lived as a Jew. Taught as a Jew. Was crucified as a Jew. He rose into heaven as a Jew, and he will return as a Jew. And there is this strength, very clearly in Scripture, I could show you, but I'm not going to get into this too deeply here, but God never, ever recanted his covenant with Israel, Jacob. Never. It was an unconditional promise. It was an unconditional covenant. He never retracted it. There is a new covenant. You can have new covenants. You can do new covenants all the time. It doesn't retract from any preceding covenants.
Oh, it was the old covenant. Now we're under a new covenant.
We are under a new covenant. But the old covenant has not gone away. God has not given up on Israel. And there are people to this day. Mark Dice is one of those individuals. I have tried to comment on some of the things he's done on some of his videos. I'm sure he has so many comments on there. He's not going to listen to me. But he's gone off on this deep end of the Zionists and how terrible they are. And now there are a group of people who will they twist that. They're called neo-Zons. I call them neo-Zons. Now, and for some reason, people don't understand what a neocon is either, people are asking the question, what is a neocon? I even heard Mark Levin the other day say, what is a neocon? Now, I like Mark Levin, but there are times when he makes some statements that are just, I disagree with, which is fine. I don't agree with everything. Still listen to the guy. He's a brilliant mind. He has good insights on especially legal matters. But one of the things that Mark Dice has been doing, he's been talking about the Christian church and how the Christians are now God's chosen people. And the Jews are no longer God's chosen people. That's bull. It's baloney. Bull-loney. But unfortunately, the Western church teaches this, basically. It comes straight from Roman Catholic, early Roman Catholic teaching and some of the things that were said. Now, I'm not going to get into this too far, but there are some very big pitfalls in Roman Catholicism. And I know Catholics that I would consider them my brothers and sisters in the faith. And I also know Roman Catholics that I would say are sick in the head. Literally, there's something wrong with them. A lot of things that let's move on. Gaza, for instance, Gaza. Now, this is a thing that this is where again, Mark Dice. I just heard Mark Dice this morning talking about Gaza and how he was showing these pictures, these drone shots of this devastation. I guess one city in Gaza that was just everything's bombed out. You have to be very, very careful. And of course, along the side of that was this thing that said 59,000 people dead. Now, it came from because of some of the things that were down on the bottom, you could tell it was coming from some kind of a Muslim reporting facility. And what I'm going to say is, I trust nothing coming from Hamas. This is information that comes from Hamas. Hamas was reporting numbers. If you added up all the numbers of, like, they'll say, 5,000 people were killed today by Israel. And if you add up all the times they've said that, there's about like a million people have died, which is no more than half their population. And you get numbers anywhere from 1.3 million people living in Gaza to 2.3 million people living in Gaza. That's how accurate we are with the numbers there. And you have this guy named Norman Finkelstein, who is one of the biggest liars when it comes to, and he supposedly is the Mr. Credibility with all the credibility. Now, I haven't heard of him on being interviewed at all lately. All of a sudden, he's gotten really quiet. I don't know if the questions I had have somehow trickled out into his world, because I did the math on everything he was saying, and it doesn't make any sense at all. He starts going into all these numbers about how many children there are in Gaza and what the unemployment rate is in Gaza. And of course, all this is Israel's fault. He supposedly is a Jew. When I hear him speak, I have a serious doubt about his Judaic commitment. Just gonna say the problem with all this is that there's so much disinformation and misinformation, mostly disinformation, coming out of Gaza. I don't trust any of it. I would not even doubt that the video footage they were showing with this whole thing, this whole city being bombed out, because they've got video of everything. Everybody's got a phone over there. They've got video of everything that happens over there, but we don't see any video of actual bombs hitting anything over there, very rarely. Of course, Israel's claim is that they're very strategic, very, very specific, targeted in their strikes. Of course, that them accidents are going to happen. And then they show this video of an entire city being bombed, you know, that's all devastated, so it's all crushed, correct? You know, it's a whole thing smashed in. There were some areas where they did some quite a bit of devastation, but they told everybody to get out. They said, we're coming in. This is where Hamas has all their stuff. We're coming in to take it out. You need to leave. You need to go to another part of the... Well, where are they supposed to go? It's an indoor prison. It's the world's largest outdoor prison. Which is, again, all platitudes and hyperbole. And it just gets to the point where, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the video footage that they're showing is of some other country. It could be Serbia, for all we know. It could be, who knows where it is. There's no verification of that, of the location. There's no verification of the video itself. It looks like old video footage. It's very low quality. I don't know of any drone out there today at all that has that low. Everything's 4K. It really is difficult to believe anything that comes out of Gaza. One day they're reporting that 29,000 people are dead. Next day they're saying that 59,000 people are dead. One incident happens where 7 people get killed, and that's all of a sudden, that's all over the news, all over the world. Now, I'm sure that Hamas, it was estimated there were 4, I don't know that they're armed soldiers. I don't know that they're uniformed Hamas soldiers. I'm not sure how many full-time Hamas soldiers there are. I would venture to say it's probably not. You know, they probably have other things that they do. I don't know if Hamas pays them to be full-time. You know, like we have full-time soldiers that wear a uniform. I don't know that happens over there. I believe it's probably more of a militia-style military. It's very difficult to distinguish from a civilian. Because it basically is a civilian army. People who are, down with the cause. And they're being used. They're cannon fodder. It's pathetic. But there's estimated 40,000 of them, which is, okay, so if they're going to kill all of Hamas, if they're going to get rid of Hamas, they claim their goal is. I saw a short the other day on YouTube. Where this guy was, he had Israel, map of Israel and all this stuff. And he starts, it says, what if at the top? And he's erasing, he's got his little pen. He's erasing all of the, like Jerusalem. He's erasing Israel. He's erasing the border where Gaza is. He's erasing all this stuff. And then he puts in the middle, he puts in all the Jewish stuff is gone. And then all the cities are gone. And then it just says Palestine on it. That's, they don't want to just eliminate Jews from Israel. Keep in mind, the people who are screaming from the river to the sea, they want Jews gone completely. This is why wherever it is, had to shut down classes, in-person classes, because, first of all, the Jewish students could not go to class. They were being told to stay home. It's too dangerous for them. Interesting that it's not the other way around. So the Jews are committing genocide, but they're the ones who have to hide. So I'm tongue-in-cheek here. Jews are committing genocide because they want to eliminate the Jews, not just from Gaza, not just from Israel, not from Palestine, as they call it, from the planet. That's what you call genocide, just for being Jewish. It's so twisted. Now, is Israel doing everything? Are they just the perfect little puppies? They're doing everything? No. I'm not going to stand by and listen to this baloney that is all hyped up about Israel being the evil one in the region and having to be eliminated. It's just not the case. And yet, people like Mark Dice. I'm really getting. I used to kind of like what he had to say. And you know, I never read any of his books. I know his books get a lot more in depth and some research, and he supposedly has a lot of documentation about things he says. One of the things he talks about is 9/11. Now, look. I don't know how old Mark Dice is. I think he's younger. I'm pretty sure he's younger than me. I was alive on 9/11. I was working on 9/11. I was an airline pilot on 9/11. That affected me very, it still affects me to this day, but it affected me a lot. The first 10 years after that happened, you heard about it every day. There was not a day that would go by that somebody didn't mention 9/11. And I was hypersensitive to hearing about it. And every time I would hear somebody say something about it, you know, my ears would perk up. Now, a lot of people probably didn't realize it was being mentioned every day. And yeah, it affected me. And for people to sit around and say, oh, planes didn't even strike the building. This is how ridiculous it gets. Now, you go start going down this hole. People get to the point where they say, oh, planes didn't even hit the buildings. Those weren't really planes. Or they swapped the planes out. It gets ridiculous. Those were missiles dressed up like planes, or the missiles shot from the planes. Now, could we have done things to prevent 9/11? Absolutely we could. And we're doing those every day now. Hopefully that's the way it's working. The biggest thing they did was harden the doors, cockpit doors. Because I guarantee you those cockpit doors were not. I was flying. I remember that those doors were, you could kick them in. One of the reasons that was, and it wasn't because, well, because that's the way they designed them, because they were hoping. No, that's not the reason at all. There's an issue with pilots being up front, trapped in an airplane they can't get out of, and nobody can get to them to rescue them if there's an accident. The door has to be designed such that if there's a problem, because, we have windows up there. We have escape hatches up there in most airplanes. In most airplanes, they're not designed to be open from the outside in the cockpit. There is one particular airplane I can think of. It's a regional jet. that does have an escape hatch that's openable from the outside. Most of them are not. The only way to get to the pilots, to the crew up front, is through the cabin door. Well, if you can't get through the cabin door, how are you going to rescue the pilots?
Well, it's just too bad.
Yeah, okay, well, whatever. That's the price we pay for security. Okay, I got it. But now they have a design so that it's is accessible for rescue crews. They know how to get that door open. And pilots can get the door open. The problem is if they're incapacitated, you can't, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. Somehow, they got to be able to get to those pilots. I'm only concerned about it because I am one. That's kind of thing. I know who's important. Those are the first class seats. The only reason those seats are important is because if somebody gets to those seats, they've got the entire plane and they've got, you know, obviously they can bring down buildings with them. Now, of course, that was the other issue is, oh, planes couldn't bring down those buildings. There's jet fuel. You can't melt steel with jet fuel. Yeah, you absolutely can. I had a little forge at one time. I had a little smelting thing that I could melt steel, especially aluminum. I could melt steel with, guess what? Kerosene. See, the fuel is only part of the equation. Air, the oxygen mixture, is also part of that. You start blowing extra air into that fuel mixture, and yeah, the temperature gets hot. I guarantee you, using jet fuel, you can melt the titanium core right out of an airplane if you burn it too hot for too long. Tell me jet fuel can't melt metal, and you can destroy a jet engine by putting too much fuel through it. The same fuel that was in those planes when they hit the buildings. And they didn't have to melt the steel. They just had to soften it. They just had to weaken it. There were a lot of other things up there where the air is blowing at, who knows what, 30 miles an hour probably up there at the top of that building. Blasting through there, creating a blast furnace. And you've got all kinds of office materials, plastics, all kinds of things happening up there. Let alone the damage that crashing the planes into the buildings caused. And they hit them at least 300 miles per hour. You take a 150,000-pound aircraft, crash it into a building, we'll see what happens there. And then, of course, if you knock down a building next to another building and see what happens at the bottom of that building.
Well, Building 7, they took it down.
It was about ready to fall down. It was too dangerous to be sitting there. Even if they did blow it down, they probably needed to. I don't know. I hear all this stuff about insurance paperwork and all this other crap that's out there. I don't know. I don't know who to believe on that one. There were some weird things that happened that day. And the day before. I believe some people knew some things that might happen. Now, did they use what happened afterwards? Absolutely, they did. The whole Patriot Act thing, in my opinion, was an incredible breach of our rights. And habeas corpus, most people don't realize this. Under Barack Obama, habeas corpus was eliminated, by the way. Barack Obama, he got away with a whole lot of things because of his skin color. I don't know if people realize this or not. Nobody could go against the guy or they were called a racist. He was basically able to do whatever he wanted to, and he was more nefarious. He deported more people than Donald Trump ever did. He did a lot worse things. He built the cages, by the way. Cages that AOC was crying about to put people in the border. He didn't build those. It wasn't his administration did that. It was Barack Obama's administration put those in. Containment facilities. If you are deemed a terrorist, and it can be any kind of terrorist, an eco-terrorist, whatever terrorist, just whatever kind of, you can be, and this is why the DOJ, this is why
Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland.
This is why Merrick Garland, I can't even imitate his voice. It is so... I would have to wrap myself up in shards of glass, probably, to build it. This is why he wanted to label parents going to teachers' meetings, parent-teacher meetings, as domestic terrorists. Because you can take away someone's right. You don't have to have, you can conduct all kinds of investigations. You don't have to have a warrant to investigate someone if you deem them a terrorist. You can put someone on the no-fly list. Take away their right to travel peaceably on a commercial airline simply by putting them on a list. No due process, no court. Just take them over, take it away.
Well, because flying is not a right.
Well, not on a commercial aircraft. They can't keep you from flying on a private aircraft. You can still charter a plane. At least at this point, you can. That'll be the next thing. You could buy your own airplane and fly yourself around. Because, but, you know, you're not safe to fly in the back seat, sit in the back of a seat of a commercial airline. But you have no rights at that point. This is why Guantanamo Bay, this is how we can put people in Guantanamo Bay and keep them there indefinitely without a trial. Because they're deemed as terrorists. Now, is it a good idea? Maybe it is. I don't know. Prisoners of war, it's a different animal, prisoner of war. But they still have rights under the Geneva Convention. Do we abide by those? I doubt it. The CIA, the OSI, all these organizations that are out there, I seriously doubt that they're, you know, abiding by all the rules. And all the while thinking that they're protecting our country, protecting our democracy, protect our democracy. Now let's get into that a little bit. This whole thing about democracy. The Democrat Party. There's nothing democratic about them. I've talked about this before, but there's nothing democratic about them. They're doing it again. They're now deciding who will be the candidates and who will be able to win, who you'll have a choice to vote for. Well, you can't vote for Donald Trump because we have to take him off the ballot because we just have to take him off there because it's our duty. We're duty bound to take him off the ballot. That's what they're saying. I think it was the Maine governor from Maine. I'm duty bound to take him off the ballot because he committed, you know, insurrection. He's an insurrectionist. I've taken him off the ballot. So you can't vote for him. Why don't you just let the people decide? That's what democracy is. No, we can't have that because we have to save our democracy. This could be the last election we ever have if he wins. Where do they come up with this idea? This is all fear-mongering and just hyperbole, platitudes. It is designed to scare people. And yet I have people telling me on the left, oh, the Republicans just want to scare everybody. I don't get that. I don't understand that. And what bothers me about them saying that this could be the last election we have if he wins is because they always say things they intend to do. That bothers me. I guess things have been a little intense this morning. I didn't mean to be so intense this morning. I guess I've gone down that road. Let's look at things we have to be hopeful for. We have a nation that cares. I think the support for Donald Trump shows me, at least, hopefully you see this, that there is a nation, there is a group of people in this nation, a large number of people in this nation that care about this country. They care about our founding principles. And I, even though I think there's a weak understanding of those principles, there is still, you know, there's this generation of people, you know, they had the baby boomers and then the Gen X folks. And there's a group in between there that kind of gets lumped in with the, well, they're the late baby boomers. No, they're really the kind of the forgotten generation. They were the kind of, I think, when was it, 58 to, was no, no, I think it's 58 to 67, something like that. Whatever it was. They were kind of considered to be the late baby boomers, pre-Gen Xers. Because they don't know what to label them. But they really aren't baby boomers. And they're, I call them the forgotten generation. Well, I don't believe there's such a thing as the forgotten generation in God's economy. And in fact, I believe it will be that generation that is going to be the key to this country being restored, not transformed. Fundamental transformation is not going to happen. Enough people standing in the way of that. Yeah. So, I believe there is hope for this nation. And I believe that we will see. I think it will be a... Well, I think people are steeling themselves, however you want to put that, bracing themselves against what is obviously coming to our nation. There's going to be some tough times ahead. But I really am very hopeful about all those things. Once again, folks, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, pray for each other. And we will get through all this. Tomorrow there will be another show. Look forward to that. God bless everybody. Have a great day.